The search for the identity of a nation almost always emerges as a reaction to a challenge to pre-existing assumptions. Caused by an encounter with an alien existence. At such times, the history of the nation is invented as a storehouse of knowledge. From which the inventor, as a member of the nation, can draw guides of behavior. The origin of the nation, especially, is a convenient object for this creative activity, because it belongs to the prehistoric era, for which conclusive historical material is extremely rare, compared to other historical times. No consensus exists as to the theory of the origin of the Japanese nation. Just like constellations formed by drawing lines between stars, different individuals form different theories by combining scraps of historical materials. However, the theory of the Japanese nation altered whenever Japanese relations with the outside world changed. In talking about the history of the Japanese nation, many theorists merely express what is taking place in their own subconscious. For mankind, nothing is more attractive than the ability to talk freely about one's past. One might be the descendant of any of the following: a pure and unstained nation, a fearless horse-riding group which conquered an indigenous people, a Middle Eastern nation depicted in the Bible, a farming nation that migrated from the South Islands. Perhaps the reason why the theory of the origin of the Japanese nation has been and remains so popular in Japan is that it is the best way for people to live their dreams. Even today, many people discuss the character of the Japanese and develop arguments on modern Japanese society based on their ideas of the origin of the nation. What sort of relationship, however, is there between a time thousands or tens of thousands of years ago, when it is presumed the nation originated, and the politics and society of today? The only link between the two is the tacit premise, both that the inhabitants of the archipelago thousands of years ago were already Japanese, and that their character has remained unchanged ever since. Even if today's Japan is relatively homogeneous compared to other countries, the main reason for this lies in the international conditions of the 19th century, that allowed Japan to avoid being colonized but did not enable it to become advanced enough to establish a large-scale empire. Unlike many third-world countries, Japan did not experience a colonial rule under which borders were drawn up despite traditional ethnic boundaries, or a policy of rule through division that intensified differences between ethnic groups. Nor were large numbers of alien peoples from other continents introduced to provide labor. Furthermore, unlike many other imperial powers, Japan did not advance into remote regions, nor did she rule her colonies long enough to establish a close relationship that would allow for large-scale migration even after her former colonies became independent, as happened in the case of Great Britain. If Japan had been divided and ruled in the 19th century, Japanese living in the south of Japan might have been classified as a different ethnic group with a different language from those living in the north. There might even have been an established anthropological theory supporting the differences between the two. Not only Japan, but almost all nation-states have created myths about their origins. Unlike the heroism of many myths, however, what lies behind this way of thinking that searches for myths is the desire to escape present realities. The essence of mythologizing the past is to escape from the trouble and fear involved in facing up to the other, and to project onto the past categories that people wish to apply to the present. Of course, stereotypes are to some degree necessary for human life. However, to avoid directly confronting the other, and gradually to create stereotypes, to escape into myths, and to attempt to explain the entire world with a single story, because we are not able to endure the shock of even a small-scale interaction, is to deny and oppress the other. Here lies the origin of all myths. The conclusion, therefore, is very simple. It is not sufficient to fight against myths by destroying one myth and replacing it with another, as in, for example, criticizing the myth of the homogeneous nation and substituting it with the myth of the mixed nation. Instead, ultimately, we should aim to liberate ourselves from all myths. This is something which will require some work. As one becomes older and more experienced, human knowledge is accumulated and beliefs are deepened, while, on the other hand, the physical strength to interact sincerely with the other on an individual basis decreases. It is this gap between overconfidence and physical weakness that allows myths to emerge. Myths are not necessary to coexist with the other. What is needed is a little strength and wisdom.